Hello, everyone. So over the past year, we've been working on deploying large-scale robotic solutions, leveraging our scan and plan technology. So I'm going to be talking about our experience with deploying those systems. So first, I'm going to talk about how the scan and plan technology has evolved, and then I'll go into our production systems that we've been deploying over the past year, give you an overview of that, also talk on the challenges that were associated with taking something that was developed in the lab and then actually deploying it on a production system, and talk about some of the solutions and ROS systems that were leveraged for the deployment. So more or less our scan and plan technology we've been developing is a lot of our clients don't have CAD models of their systems. They're using legacy parts that were developed using 2D drawings. So we're developing solutions that allows them to move this part into an environment, 3D scans whatever is in the environment, provides the ability for the user to interact with that part that was scanned by selecting different surfaces, identifying the components that they want to process. Then after that is done, then it moves on and actually then generates the tool paths on the surface, generates the robot trajectory, and then executes those. So this technology we started developing in 2014. There on the left, in 2016, we did a pilot demonstration at Caterpillar in one of their facilities using an industrial robot with a PushCorp end effector for scanning 3D or complex geometry surfaces, identifying excess material, and then allowing the user to select the different areas that identified as excess material, and then generating toolpaths to execute the robot trajectory for removing that excess material. The cell on the right is an image of one of three cells that are being deployed over this past year for leveraging the scan and plan technology for doing chemical depaint, media blast, sanding, and agitation. So the first production system that we developed was a two-axis gantry with a sixth-off manipulator on it. It had a range of 6 meters by 4 meters for the gantry, and the robot had about a 2.6-meter reach. One of the caveats to this, the original integrator that we worked with on this had originally selected to go with a, we weren't originally involved in the initial bid of this project. We were contacted after the original person to develop the software components for this application was unable to deliver. They actually decided to close up their robotics department. So they reached out to us and asked if we could provide a solution leveraging our scan and plan technology to help implement this software for them. At that time, we were like, yeah, we were able to do that. We don't see any issues. And then they said, great, can you do it in 3 months? We have an FAT at the client. So that added some other complex challenges to take something that we had developed in a lab and actually get it production ready in 3 months. For this effort, we generated two solutions. There was an offline solution and an online solution. And I'll go into more details on what the different solutions did. So the offline solution provided them, since there was no CAD, they wanted to provide some user input on the way the tool paths were generated for executing these processes. So we implemented a ARVIS plugin that provided an interface for scanning the booth, adding new parts to a database, and allowed them to define model data, like localization features. They needed to localize the part in it. And their original design implementation, they wanted to do to align based on features. So we basically created an interface that allowed them to pick these different localization features and then also define verification points on the part and then save that to a database. And then once that was added to the database, it allowed them to go through and define the job. Was it chemical depaint? Was it media blast? Was it sanding? What was the process that's going to be executed? And they were allowed to identify all these multiple processes for the single part. And then allowed them to automatically generate the tool pass on the surface. It provided user input so they can make tweaks to it if they didn't like the way the tool pass was generated. There were different features like offset between the different segments, approach and departure parameters, and those type of things allow them to identify that ahead of time, save it in the database, and then it would reuse that later on when they actually executed the process on the part. So that was the offline component. The online component more or less allowed them to basically scan the part in the booth, select a predefined model data for that part, and then localize it. They were able to verify the localization to ensure that it properly located the part. If that was deemed valid, they would then approve the verification that it was localized. Then we would perform a detailed scan. So then we would use that rough scan of the environment as a collision model to then go in and perform a very detailed scan very close to the part to get a really nice reconstruction of the surface. We would then generate the tool pass on the or leverage the old tool pass, generate motion planning, provide the operator with the ability to either reject or approve the robot trajectory, and if they approved it, then it would go on and execute the process. Some other features that they wanted in this was logging, being able to log the state of the system, what errors came up, so they could, one, it helped us be able to debug when things didn't work the way they expected, and also provide them a record for every part that went through this production system. They also wanted the ability to manually manipulate it from the software. So you can imagine they're operating this from a booth. Some of these processes were very caustic, so they couldn't actually be in the environment. They needed the ability to manipulate it outside in the control station. So we provided them an interface for manually manipulating the part. As part of the manual manipulation, we developed an RViz plugin that they wanted both the ability to manipulate the part both in Cartesian space and also joint space, because sometimes they would get weird jumps and flips in the IK solution, would force it to do in a configuration that wasn't desirable to them. And they wanted to be able to change the manipulation. They didn't want to just do, they wanted to be able to change the manipulator group. So sometimes they just wanted to manipulate the gantry without manipulating the robot, or they wanted to just do the robot. So we created an RViz plugin that provides them ability to not only manipulate in Cartesian space, but also joint space for driving the robot around and generating motion plans. Also, in these production systems, they're very large. As I mentioned, they're 6 meters by 4 meters, these cells. There's a lot of collision points. In the next slide, I'll show some of those. But they can't see all different aspects of it. And they were having issues with operators driving these robots around and self-collision or wrapping up the festooning and damaging components of this that was not. So what we did is we created an offline node that runs live, reads in the joint states, and is running live collision checking. We were able to achieve about 80 hertz on this system, publishing that data to the PLC, and if it got within a certain threshold, the PLC would then execute a safe stop to the robot. This was to prevent the operator from running into these parts or running into itself. Some of these parts are very expensive. They can't be replaced. So this was one aspect that we added to help reduce the risk of operator error for that. So as you can see on this cell here, the festooning turned out to be a big challenge as part of this effort here for robot trajectory generation. In this, because we came in late to the game, because they needed somebody to come in, we were not able to change the design. The design had already been bought off by the client, so we could not make any changes to this cell. So we had to live within these constraints of the existing system. As a result, there probably could have been some design changes to the festooning to make it easier, but as a result, the festooning actually limited the robot. It could not extend all the way out. It actually had to stay more in a crouched position the whole time. They also defined a whole bunch of, a lot of these industrial robots have, at least on Fanuc robots, they call them DCS, joint exclusion domes. You can actually say, joint one between 10 and negative 10, joint two can't between this range, and it was cascading. So we also, one of the big challenges for that, we had to come up with a way to represent that both in our motion planner side to be able to avoid these constraints. Also, we were only able to stay in two configurations. It was a basically in foot and nut, wrist up, wrist down type configuration. We weren't able to bend the elbow back behind it. So we had to model those different configurations in both our hybrid planners, and I'll talk in more detail on those. Another interesting one is we did run into cell, the second cell we were doing. It was actually a 1 meter gantry system by 6 meters, and the robot liked to plan where it was always against the joint limit. So we ran into a lot of numerical issues where we would send the trajectory down, and in our software it was right at a joint limit, which was fine, but due to rounding and conversion errors on the robot, it would throw an error saying, oh, you're outside joint limits, and vice versa. The robot would plan, we would get the joint states from it. So we had to add in a lot of checks on that to handle that from both our trajectory sending it to the robot and the getting information back from the robot on that. And some additional challenges was the error recovery of the system. We didn't want them to have to, because it was a long process, we didn't want them to, when a single fault, to have to go back to the very beginning, rescanning, reselecting the part. So they wanted to be able to just go back to individual states in the system and start from there without having to go back to the beginning of the process. To lead into that, we actually leveraged the SCXML standard for defining state machine. Qt has a nice GUI interface for visualizing these state machines. We developed a package on top of that that provides nice features for quickly integrating ROS components as states in the SCXML mainframe. And our plan is to open source it. We're currently refining it and improving it as part of these projects that are going on this year, as managing those states and allowing us to jump from different states in the process without having to restart the whole system from the beginning. Next, I'm going to talk about some of the core components of this cell. So in the beginning, we had to scan the entire environment. We currently use YAC, which is another TSDF implementation available for aggregating all the different sensor data to fully reconstruct the surface of the components. Currently, right now, it is we decided to make it ROS agnostic, mainly because we had both ROS 1 and ROS 2 components that are leveraging this technology, so we wanted to be able to make improvements to it without having a deviation between the ROS 1 and ROS 2 version of it. It is currently open sourced and available to use. So we use that to generate the surface or reconstruct the part. We then took that information and used NoEther, which is our which is also open source for generating, taking a surface and generating tool paths on that mesh surface. Here's an example on the right that took a mesh that was reconstructed and generated all the different tool paths. It also has filtering components into it that you may not want to process the whole part as is. It has a whole filtering pipeline I'll show in the next slide that can take this. It actually breaks it up into common surfaces that may be more ideal for the process. Some of the new components that are integrated is a filtering pipeline. It works on both meshes and point clouds, and it's configurable from a YAML file, so you can quickly change your filtering pipeline, make adjustments, change parameters, and send it through these different components. Another thing we noticed as the TSDF, we were using low-cost sensors that had noise. So you would get, near the edges of the mesh, you would get pretty drastic normal changes in the surface. We were looking for another solution to help improve the surface reconstruction. As part of this, we did find that PCL in the source implementation has a B-spline surface reconstruction. It's actually not available in the Debian release, but you can get it by source. An example down there is below. It basically fits a B-spline surface using OpenNURB. And in most of the applications that we were using it, most of the surface fit very well to a B-spline type surface. So this allowed us to, instead of using marching cubes or one of those others from the TSDF generation, we would pass it through the B-spline reconstruction and get a better mathematical surface representation of the part that was in the environment. Another component would actually trim the point cloud and give you a B-spline edge, which was nice for some of these processes that you needed to process the edge of it. I recommend taking a look. It's got a lot of features. It's OpenNURB, I believe, is maintained by Rhino, is the commercial product that maintains OpenNURB. For the motion planning environment, we use Tesseract. We've added some new, because of the motion planners that we are currently using, rely on convex shapes for the collision geometries to get the performance we needed for contact monitoring those. We've added support for convex mesh, SDF meshes, octomaps, and point clouds. And to accommodate these different meshes, we created a custom URDF parser for those to be able to parse in those as part of the URDF. We've added new kinematics for in Tesseract for IKFast and OPW kinematics. And then we've now integrated different motion planners. So we have Descartes and OpenPL integration, and we've also created hybrid planning. We found this to be very valuable in these situations, especially at the scale. In the case of Descartes, at these large systems, these wing structures and stuff that are going into it, you will find that quickly using Descartes on a gantry system, it's easy to run out of 60, 80 gigabytes of memory very quickly when sampling it. So we weren't able just to use Descartes, and we weren't able to just use TragOpt, which was an optimization-based library, because of local minima. So we created this hybrid approach where we used Descartes, where we would sparsely sample the toolpath. We'd roughly get a good guess on what the robot trajectory should look like, and then we were fed it into TragOpt, which is a SQP solver optimization that then could handle some of these, like these DCS constraints and joint smoothness and some of the other components to further smooth out and optimize the trajectory. For the free space components in these processes, we would use OpenPL as the seed to TragOpt. So we would use OpenPL to get the rough free space motion, and then we would use TragOpt to smooth it out and satisfy the other constraints. Currently, there is ROS support, and there is full ROS 2 support, with the exception we're working on porting the RViz components for the ROS 2. One of the major contributions to Tesseract was this whole process planning framework. So in most of these, NoEther just gives you a tool path on the surface. But for a process, you typically have a custom approach. You may have a custom attack angle that you have on the surface that you want to achieve. Say for grinding, you don't want to be flat to the surface. Usually you're at some angle of attack. And then departure out of it. And then how do you get to that process path? So we created a whole framework where you could take a toolpath, which is more or less the green arrows that are on this drawing, and it would take that and turn it into your process path. So you could create custom approach generators, departure generators, and then transition generators. How do I transition between segments? Some cases you don't want to move in a linear line. You may want to do a free space mode or free space motion, mainly because you get into a weird configuration and you can't move linearly, you need to unwind. So we created a whole framework that allows you to take a toolpath and define your own custom process and turn it into that. And then you could feed that to the hybrid planner that would take Descartes and feed it through TragOpt. One of the interesting things you'll see here was you also added a from-end component. This was very critical for failure recovery. So say you got halfway through this path and you wanted, something happened and you needed to abort. And you don't want to have to re-raster back through the path to get home. So by having an already pre-planned from start, you could actually just daisy chain down the from start, get back one segment, and then just go from start, from end, from start, from end. And you already had a collision-free trajectory to get you all the way home. So this was a very interesting component because it would take a long time to wind back through the process path instead of automatically replanning. So this is just talking about Descartes. So it was originally developed for convex optimization. We have then grown it to handle a lot of industrial applications, so dynamic Cartesian cost and constraint improvements for the case where you want to track something on a positioner and you want it optimized for that. We've added some new solvers to it, so now you have both, let's see, SQP or OSQP solver, QP Oasis, some of these other solvers we're slowly integrating into it. Gyrobi is a commercial product, so if you want something that's a little bit more reliable than some of these open source ones, you can use Gyrobi. And our next step of this is right now it's tightly integrated with Tesseract, but our plan is to find a way to separate it so it can be not only leveraged in Tesseract, but it could also be leveraged in MoveIt. Our plan is to leverage Typeracers to be able to do that more efficiently. So Descartes Lite, for the Descartes side, we use both Descartes Lite and OPW Kinematics. OPW Kinematics works well for spherical risk planar robots. Gives you fast inverse kinematic solutions. We have added components around IK fast implementations, gantry sampling. It's also ROS agnostic, and so is OPW Kinematics, so we can quickly use that in both ROS 1 and ROS 2 applications. So here's the final system running. And one of the interesting things we had to change in this is because we both have a gantry that's in meters, you have a robot units in radians. In order to get the smooth motion in the system, we had to weight the different, for the optimization side, we had to apply a weight to both the joints in the robot versus the gantry system, because you would find that if you didn't weight them or scale them such that, because they're not one-to-one, you would get where the robot would actually do most of the motion, and then it would hit its limit, and then the rail would move, and then once it got to the end, it would slow down and crouch back up. So you got weird motions in both the robot, and it wasn't actually very smooth. So when we changed the weighting such that it would actually use the gantry more, and it would basically use the manipulator to do just fine adjustments for the process. So then you would just more or less get really smooth gantry motion, and it would just basically be using the robot to do the fine adjustments to meet your process constraints. So that was actually one critical component that we had to do to get better performance out of this gantry system. Okay.
Thank you, Levi.
Thank you, everyone.
Any questions? Hard to tell with people changing between sessions. With the XML state machine stuff, are there also Python interactions possible for that?
I don't know. I would assume so. But I think everything we did was on the C++ side for the S6 XML.
Cool. Well, thank you, Levi.